fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who.
Hey everybody, welcome to Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is Friday, July 25th, and this week we have got a lineup of some of the wildest, craziest stories that we have heard from you all since we've been doing Freaky Friday now for 224 episodes. So thank you to everybody who sent in your story so far. We would love to read your odd but true tale on air. If you have any connection to any of the recent episodes we covered, perhaps you have had an encounter with a cryptid. I'm still looking for Bigfoot encounters. Make sure you send them in over at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. We hope everyone's having a wonderful summer so far. We'll be back with a brand new episode next week. But in the meantime, we hope you enjoy this lineup of some truly jaw-dropping prior Freaky Friday stories that I have curated for you all today. We hope you enjoy, and we'll be back next week.
This first one is from Jenna, and it is called "I Was an RA to a Potential Bomb Builder." Hi, friends. Let me just get to it. In college, I was an RA. I like to think I wasn't one of those asshole RAs that busted underage kids drinking in the dorms just because I could. My rule of thumb was, if you were smart and safe, we wouldn't have a problem. I have a lot of stories, but this story beats all of them, in my opinion. My first year as an RA, I worked in a primarily freshman hall. On move-in day, we had a 25-year-old man moving into a typically 18 to 20-year-old represented dorm with an 18-year-old roommate. Hear me out. I am so stoked that people are going to college at any age and even are taking up residence in the dorms. The situation was just a little weird. If I had to live with an 18-year-old at 25, I would have lost my shit. Not surprisingly, the 18-year-old moved out ASAP. Honestly, this guy freaked me out from the beginning. He just didn't seem to have a grasp on reality. He would wander the halls aimlessly in his PJ pants, bathrobe, and no shirt on. He would leave the building with a fifth of booze to climb old grain elevators and come back either drunk or high out of his mind. He'd spend hours staring at the elevator lights in the lobby. He started leaving flowers and love notes at the door of a girl who was creeped out by him. At one point, one of my residents came to tell me that as she was entering the building, this guy was sitting on the picnic table in the front, wearing a bowl as a helmet, and throwing oranges around. Sadly, my resident got hit by one of those oranges. I expressed all my concerns about this man to my boss, just to keep his eye out in case of a mental health crisis. Well, lo and behold, right before the winter break, I hear the elevator door open outside my room, see this man pin something to the wall, and then run down the stairs. I went to check it out, and no shit, this man pinned a Christmas wish list to Santa straight on the wall. Tack and all. There was a bulletin board 2 feet away, and the wall wasn't even easy to put a tack in, but whatever. This list was bizarre. I wish I had taken a photo, but I promptly gave it to my boss, who actually dismissed the note. The list included wishes of ammunition and explosives. Yep, my boss dismissed that. Not even a week later, I watched this motherfucker walk into the dorm with a bag full of fireworks. We called the cops and he was taken into custody and banned from campus. It really freaked me out to think he was casually walking into my hall with fireworks after requesting explosives from Santa. While he was being arrested, he couldn't really form a coherent sentence to officers. But that doesn't even end it there. His room was searched and he had drawn plans to blow up the building. He had a briefcase with trace amounts of heroin in it and a lot of other manifesto-type ramblings in it. It was really scary, knowing that I felt weird about this man, saw him pin a wish list for explosives, and I got told it was a non-issue and essentially was dismissed. There was no intended reason why, which is even creepier. Do you think I'm done? Absolutely not. His room ended up quarantined off through break, and the floor he had lived on smelled awful. Turned out, he had been using the garbage can in his room as a shitter. The folks that had to clean that up should have been given a 3-year vacation. It was a really weird time. I am thankful that we were able to remove him from the building. I do wish and hope that he got mental health help. As scary as it was, I really think it was a psychotic break of some sort. Thanks, y'all. I love the podcast very much. It brings me a lot of joy. I retired my RA duties in 2016, and now am a professional mentor to 10 young, wonderful, underserved girls. The program is long-term, and I get to be with these kiddos until they graduate or are 18. I have varying ages of girls, but we constantly talk about mental health and how important they are, despite their experiences or what the world tells them. They are a future I believe in. Much love, Jenna.
Well, I love that Jenna left us on such a positive note. That's wonderful to know that there are groups like that out there supporting people and making mental health a priority. The boss done fucked up.
Yeah, of all the places to not let stuff go, I think a school is, in America especially, should be at the top of the list where we don't just turn a blind eye to somebody talking about explosives in a university or a school setting.
And it'd be one thing if it was just bizarre behavior and they kind of said, yeah, we can't really do it. But it's like, you mentioned something like dangerous or violent. I think just taking it seriously. I'm not saying you have to take him to jail. Just have a one-on-one interview with him. Just chat with him a little bit until you find out he's been sneaking dumps in his room the whole time.
I don't know how that wasn't found out earlier. I mean, if he didn't have a roommate, but just the smell alone, you would think there would have been complaints. But the behavior of leaving unwanted romantic gestures to the girl and the just bizarre behavior in general. It is, and much like Jenna, I'm all for people going to school at any age. And if you want to live on campus, that is your right. As an 18-year-old, I would not have felt comfortable living with a 25-year-old, I don't believe. I would feel less comfortable living with an 18-year-old at 25. So that would have sent up a red flag. As an 18-year-old, I may have been like, oh, cool. Now I got somebody to buy me beer. But it's all of this put together definitely paints a creepy picture. And the most alarming part is she did what she should have done and went and told her boss and it was dismissed.
Especially like you said with the unwanted romantic gestures and then hitting another student. Yeah, it was an orange, but you still hit me in the head. Incidents like that, you're like, now it's becoming cumulative. And you hate to see that it has to take a sack or a bag, I don't know if it was a duffel bag or a sack full of fireworks on premises to go, wait a minute, we got to call someone in on this. What's been happening? You're like, I've been telling you what's been happening for a while.
Yeah, it's if I can almost get kicked out of the dorms for just getting really drunk and crawling down the hall, you'd think that people could get kicked out for a lot less.
They should have made you an RA for doing that.
Damn, I don't want the job. And bless you, Jenna, for being an RA, because I never envied those people. Mine was named Jenny. She was very nice. Her boyfriend was also an RA who was also nice, but
they flocked together.
They, you know, that RA life just isn't for me. I'm not the one. I would have been fired very quickly because a lot of people would have gotten away with a lot of shit under my watch.
Yeah, I'm always like, that's the rule, but is it a just rule and should we obey it?
Oh, I would have just been like, do whatever you want. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, I don't see, like Jenna said, I'm not hurt. You're not hurting anybody. You're staying in your room. You're not bugging me. I don't really care. If you wake me up, you're expelled immediately. Don't wake me up.
Yeah, don't do that.
Sinister Hood will be right back. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. We talk about mental health more openly now, but asking for help can still feel hard. BetterHelp's latest research confirms it. BetterHelp's 2026 State of Stigma report surveyed 2,000 Americans and revealed that 85% of Americans believe getting support is wise, yet 74% say society discourages people from doing so. And it makes sense. Before I started seeing my therapist through BetterHelp, I did almost have this stigma like, well, if you're going to see a therapist, there must be something wrong with you. When in reality, none of us are perfect. None of us have it all figured out. And it helps to have someone that you can speak with who's just there to help you and to listen to you. And you also don't feel like you're, you know, unloading on somebody in your life. It is a professional who's asking, how can I help? And it has been so valuable to me. BetterHelp does the initial match work for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences. references, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from their tailored recs. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. Don't let stigma stand in the way of support. Start therapy with BetterHelp. Sign up and get 10% off at betterhelp.com/sinister. That's betterhelp.com/sinister.
This first one is from Kinsey, and we're coming in hot with "My child shares DNA with the serial killer." Listen up, tens. A five is speaking. So, I have a six-year-old daughter, and I know every parent, aunt, uncle, whatever that's listening, understands when I say six-year-olds are fucking insane. I always joke around when she's having a tantrum that she's a psycho, but considering she actually has serial killer DNA in her little body, I should probably stop saying that. I don't believe you've covered him, but my daughter's great uncle is Paul Ezra Rhodes. I've gone down many rabbit holes about him, so all the podcasts and documentaries have blurred together. Paul was an absolute piece of shit from Idaho Falls, Idaho, who murdered innocent people in the Idaho and Utah area in the 80s. He was convicted in 3 separate kidnappings and murders, although it's believed he had 6 victims. Idaho Falls is located smack dab in the middle of where the abducted in plain sight victim, Jan Broberg, lived in Pocatello, and where Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell lived in Rexburg. I tried thinking of an insult to call Lori and Chad, but they don't even deserve that energy from me. Anyway, back to this mouth breather, Paul. On February 28, 1987, Paul abducted and murdered Stacy Baldwin from her job in Blackfoot, Idaho, about 30 minutes from Idaho Falls. March 17, 1987, he murdered Nolan Haddon while he was working at a gas station in Idaho Falls. Nolan was found in the walk-in cooler. March 19, 1987, Susan Mickelbacher was abducted, raped, and murdered. She was a special education teacher who was abducted in the parking lot. His other victims were Christine Gallegos, who was only 16, Carla Maxwell, and Lisa Strong. I believe these 3 were in Utah, and it's important to remember their names as well. Douche Canoe Paul was never convicted for these murders. I found out my ex was related to this piece of shit kind of on accident. My ex's last name is Meyer, and one of our first conversations went something like this. Tim, I have a brother named Michael. Me. Ah, so your brother's Michael Myers? Him. His last name is actually different. It's Rhodes. Me. Oh, like Paul Ezra Rhodes, the serial killer being executed this month? Sure as shit, he said yes. That was his uncle. I should have taken this as a red flag, but you live and you learn. This was in 2011, and I still think about how dumb I felt trying to make that joke. In 2017, we had our daughter, and every time I remember she's technically related to a murderer, I become more and more grateful that podcasts like yours have taught me the early signs of psychopathic potential. Kind of a joke, kind of not. This part isn't necessarily part of the story, but it's a huge thank you. My mother-in-law, Karen, was an absolute angel and the complete opposite of her, quote, family member, Paul. She was a huge part of my life since 2011 and sadly passed away on May 22nd. She kicked stage 3 breast cancer's ass, was in remission, and a heart attack of all things stole her from us. On May 26th, I was shopping for a dress for her funeral and had Freaky Friday episode 62 playing in my headphones. Hearing about Bella swinging from Edward's nuts and poppling yourself made me laugh out loud for the first time that week. I definitely needed it, and I appreciate you both so much for that. Keep it creepy and hug your mom tight if you still have her.
Oh, well, thank you, Kenzie, for sending that. And rest in peace, Karen. It's important when you have relationships like that in your life where it's like an adopted mom later on in life. And it's so hard when you lose them so quickly, but mm-hmm. We're glad we can make you laugh. And what a piece of information to learn on a date.
And I want to say, speaking of making people laugh, don't feel bad about making that joke. I think, so your brother is Michael Myers, that's funny. Most people would say that. You weren't prepared, nor could you have ever expected
the retort.
Yeah, that's something that he dropped that on you. It was like a, yeah, Rhodes. Yeah, exactly like that, Rhodes.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Could have just maybe made, he could have eased it in the conversation a little nicer, but
yeah.
Yeah, that's yeah. something to,
oof. Yeah, or just, yeah, his last name's different.
Yeah.
Anyways, so what are you thinking about having tonight? I mean, I don't know if you got to get into that on a first date.
Yeah, it's pretty early on to bring all of that. It's not even just like, well, it was in the news. I mean, he was a heinous serial murderer across mm-hmm. years and states and a wake of destruction. Not the good sort of a story to bring up early on in your dating relationship.
I guess if there's a potential that somebody could find it out about you, maybe you want to get ahead of it. And that's not to say, I mean, it's your family member. It's not you. So I think Kinsey brings up a good point of when it comes to DNA, is there something to be worried about there? I have no answer, but I'm sure that your little girl who is six, who is acting like a psychopath now, as Ella's 5.5. And I think that's just what happens because shit's wild right now.
Wild. I'm not a parent, but I'm a fun aunt. And so that means I get to go and play imagination with kids. Like, I'm very much like the no adults allowed except Aunt Heather. She can come. And I'm like, mm-hmm. yes, I'm still the cool one.
You're
and
cool.
Yeah, the things kids come up with, you're like, what? And okay, sure. That's right. Wild. Like, off the wall.
Well, but, also, the tantrums are next level. So I hope that you get through this phase and everything's Gucci after that.
Right,
you
she'll be
think
seven.
About Paul Ezra Rhodes ever again.
Exactly. She'll be seven then, and that is definitely a benefit of the fun aunt is the tantrums. I'm like, oh no, mom, I'm going to go. Y'all need to handle this. Love you.
And you get to go out on top while we have to swoop in and clean up the mess.
Exactly.
The perks of being the fun aunt. Everybody's favorite.
I am. That's the only thing I want to be. Well, thank you, Kinsey, for sending that in.
Yes, thank you so much.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. The pair of glasses I have gotten the most compliments on my entire life are my Zenni glasses. They're adorable. They're tortoiseshell. They have a custom carving on the side that say, I dissent. Should have worn them for our Supreme Court episode. But replacing your glasses usually feels like a whole production. I'll tell you where to go that it's going to be easy, it's going to be great, and it's going to give you a pair of glasses that people are going to stop you and be like, where did you get those? That is Zenni. In 2026, replacing your eyeglasses is a pain. Most of us, you just live with it. Your stuff's scratched and you don't care. I tell you what, you don't have to live like that. You don't have to schedule an appointment, pay a fortune, or wait. Zenni Optical fixes all of that. Zenni is an online eyewear shop with prescription glasses, sunglasses, and blue light lenses starting at under $30. Pick a frame, upload your prescription, and they ship it to your door. No appointment, no store, no upsell. And at that price, something shifts. You stop asking, do I really need new glasses? And you just start getting, I need more pairs of glasses. You need one for work, one for fun, one that only matches one single outfit. You don't have to justify it. Don't let anybody make you feel bad about your large number of glasses. Over 150,000 five-star reviews. And if you've never bought glasses online, Zenni has a virtual try-on so you can see exactly how a frame looks on your face before you commit. That's what I did with mine, and I'm so glad I did because of all the compliments. If your glasses are overdue for a refresh, now is the time. Go to zenni.com/podcast and use code podcast15 for 15% off your first order. The styles sell out, so don't sit on it. That's zenni.com/podcast. Promo code podcast15.
And another horrifying plane story comes in from Florida Man. And the subject line is, I took a flight lesson with the Lolita Express pilot. First of all, I'm from Florida. Pauses for jokes. Many years ago, I was working for a company that offered flying lessons with a company plane and a professional pilot. I've never been afraid to fly, so I signed up for my first complimentary flight lesson. A few weeks later, I'm pulling up to the airplane hangar, and out walks this beautiful, tall blonde. She was stunning. I stuttered through a, hello, how are you? My instructor introduced herself as Nadia, and after some pre-flight checks, we climbed into the cockpit and we were up in the air. Between instructing me on how to read all the dials, lights, and keep the plane level, we made small talk.
Nadia told me about her flying career. She had set some records and was known as the Gulfstream Girl in the aviation community. She took some pictures of me flying, and after an hour or so, we landed the plane. Mostly her, as I had a death grip on the stick. I thanked her for the lesson and decided that flying just wasn't for me and never scheduled another lesson. I went about the rest of my life until COVID lockdown 2020, when I'm watching a series called Dirty Money about Jeffrey Epstein. Nadia's picture pops up on the screen and my eyes pop out of my head. Remember in the beginning of the email I said I was from Florida? Hold on to your butts. I was a student at Royal Palm Beach High School when Jeffrey Epstein was trafficking underage girls to not only his home on Palm Beach Island, but also his private island in the Caribbean. Nadia Marcinko was his Lolita Express pilot and a co-conspirator. I didn't know about Jeffrey Epstein's crimes until years after I graduated. As an adult, I can't help but think that some of my classmates also met Nadia, but under much different circumstances, and it makes me sick. That's how I didn't end up on the Lolita Express in high school, but did end up taking a flight lesson with a Jeffrey Epstein co-conspirator as an adult.
Wow. When you're watching that documentary and somebody that you know, a documentary about heinous crimes in your area and somebody's face that you know pops up, I mean, that's like a record scratch moment.
And you also think, well, shit, I was a step away from perhaps being propositioned. Maybe I was too old. If they were no longer in high school at the time, then probably wasn't what Jeffrey Epstein was looking for. But like they said, their classmates perhaps didn't have the same luck and instead became victims. And fuck Nadia to the moon and beyond. I don't know where she is right now, hopefully in jail. But anybody that took part in the crimes that he committed needs to be in prison forever. It's just
certainly. And yeah. Any aiding, especially you're the one that's trafficking. You're physically driving the bus, trafficking people to the Caribbean, trafficking children to the Caribbean.
How do you fucking sleep at night? Probably on a pile of money that you've been given by Epstein. But you're flying a plane just filled with 14 and 15 year old girls to an island where you know damn well what's about to happen.
Or it's happening behind you on the plane.
Yeah. And you are like so many of the women that we've seen with NXIVM and this, they're attractive and they recruit other, you know, that kind of disarms people. Young girls see this attractive woman that, you know, wants to befriend them, and that's, there's something appealing about that. And he knew what he was doing by hiring someone like that to do that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it lulls you into a sense of security. Mm-hmm. Oh, Giselle, or what's Ghislaine?
Ghislaine, who knows? Who cares?
Ghislaine, yeah. Ghislaine Maxwell. It's one of those people that I'm like, you don't deserve space in my brain. Fuck you.
Yeah.
But you have a female co-conspirator, Ghislaine Maxwell. You have a female pilot. And that's what some of the survivors said. Oh, well, Ghislaine was there. Like, other people were there. Mm-hmm. So I felt okay about it, not knowing that everybody's in on it. Yeah, that's horrifying.
It is.
Sinister Hood will be right back.
Well, this next one we have is from Laura. And the subject line is, "The time my daughter was almost kidnapped." Hello, ladies. This is a long one, so let's get into it. My husband works for a local grocery store. So, naturally, he does most of our grocery shopping since he's there 5 days out of the week. However, sometimes I like to take our son and daughter to his store for a surprise visit and some shopping. When we're done shopping, I always text my husband to let him know we're checking out. He then meets us at the register to help us take the groceries out to the car and say bye-bye to the kids and I. It's so cute, right? He's the best. Now, this happened in 2021 when my daughter was 2 and my son was about 4 months. So I was one tired mama. This particular visit was just like any other, except halfway through, my son became very fussy. I was still getting used to juggling 2 kids out in public at this time, so it's safe to say I was a bit flustered and I was not on high alert. When I was finally done shopping, I texted my husband and headed straight to the self-checkout. Unbeknownst to me, though, I didn't hit send, so my husband never got my text. I started scanning my groceries while trying to soothe my infant son and keep my daughter entertained in the cart at the same time. For context, I was carrying my son in a baby carrier. After a minute, a man behind me in line asked if he could help me out scanning my groceries. I politely told him no and continued on. Another minute goes by, and the man asked again, "Are you sure you don't need help?" I said, "Thank you, but I'll be fine." He then said something like, "You just look like you have your hands full, and I thought I could," and then walked off. I realized he was only holding one or two items and that there were other self-checkouts open. He didn't have to wait at my register. I just thought, odd, and kept going. I finally got myself checked out and was putting my bags in the cart when this guy comes back. He said, "I just can't let you do this by yourself. You've got your hands full. Let me help you get your groceries to your car at least." At this point, I'm on my last fuse. My son is crying. My daughter is scream singing the ABCs. And there's no sign of my husband. So I said, "Okay, that's fine." And I wish I never said that. I started to push the cart towards the door when this asshole pushes me to the side and takes the cart from me with my daughter still in the cart and bolts for the door. My daughter instantly started screaming at the top of her lungs. It startled the guy enough that he slowed down. I was able to catch up with him and grab the cart back. At the same time, I saw my husband coming out of the store's stockroom, completely oblivious that this asshole was trying to kidnap our daughter. I yelled, "My husband is over there," and took the cart and ran towards my husband. He was surprised to see me running at him with both kids screaming. When I got to him, he took our daughter out of the cart to calm her down and asked, "What's going on?" I was about to yell, "Where were you?" when I noticed the guy at the opposite side of the department watching us. I told my husband, "Let's go to the car now." As we went out, the guy followed us at a distance, but didn't come out of the store with us, and I lost track of him. It makes me sick to think what could have happened if that man had gotten away with my daughter. I beat myself up for a while after for letting it happen, but I keep reminding myself that she's still here with us, safe, and that's all that matters. She's now 4 and is a goofy, sassy, and independent little girl. She has a big voice, and I know she's going to grow up and do great things. I just can't imagine a world without her, and I'm so thankful for her every day.
This is one of my worst fears.
That is so bold to just elbow the lady and start taking off.
Yeah, it sounds like from the beginning he had ill intentions. If you're in a self-checkout and there's other ones empty,
just get the fuck out of the way.
Why would you need to be waiting? Just go to another one. And also, if a woman says, "No, I don't need help," then fucking leave her alone.
That's
you don't
it.
Have to keep, don't act like you're some kind of savior. If she needed help, she'd ask for it. She doesn't know you. Get out of the way.
Yeah. And it's one thing if you say, "Hey, I got 2 kids at home. I know it must be hard. Do you need any help? Like, you hold the kids, I'll scan the groceries." And if she says, "Yeah, okay." But if she's like, "Oh, I'm all set," don't come back 3 times and push and push and push, because then you do look like a kidnapper. This case turns out he was, in fact, a kidnapper.
To say, "I just can't let you do that." Who the fuck are you?
Yeah, you're not 40.
You don't have any control over this. You don't get any ownership over this situation.
Yeah, it gets my goat. I'm a helper. I love to help people out. I'll dive in for whatever. But when it's forced assistance, to me, that's not altruistic.
No.
You're doing it because you'll feel bad if you don't do something, and now you're forcing your help on someone. I recently saw an incident where a person had stumbled, another person was trying to help them, and the helper was just insistent, and I could tell the person that fell was like feeling stressed. And I kind of tried to get the helper away, and I just told the person that fell, "I'm available. I'm 3 feet away. Let me know if you need any help. I'm not going to force this on you." And the person that fell said, "Thank you so much. Actually, I'll got it. No worries." But it was stressful to me to watch this interaction where someone's like, "Take my help. You have to take my help. Take my help."
And then as the person that they're trying to offer the help, you've fallen. You're embarrassed. You're like, "Can we not draw any more attention to this? I would like to just pretend like no one saw this and then get up on my own." And now you're causing a big ass scene so you can be some kind of hero.
It was bizarre to me. And I get it. I don't ascribe any ill intent to the helper consciously. But to me, watching that, you're absolutely right. It's like making such a bigger spectacle out of it that the person that would maybe otherwise be willing to accept help is like, "Well, I don't need you to announce it," of like, "They're fine, everybody. I'm going to help out." And it's like, okay, Dwight Schrute, like, come on now. Like,
Read the room, buddy.
Read the room is it. Yeah. So that's why I was like, if you need help, I'm available. But if not, I will fuck off.
I just got to say to Laura, I get it that you want, I would have beaten myself up for a long time after this too. I think you're doing the right thing. So you just got to remind yourself she's here, she's safe. And we've all been tired, moms or not, just tired parents, tired people at the store, and you're not thinking clearly. There was a time when Ella was first born that, like, I was scared to go to any store by myself because it is a whole new world you're trying to navigate of, like, having a small child that you're also trying to care for while grocery shopping. It's very stressful. So you got a four-month-old, you got a two-year-old, everybody's screaming, you're at your wit's end. Don't blame yourself. This guy was clearly a shithead. I'm so glad it all worked out how it should have.
Yeah, you're right. Don't blame yourself because he was just wearing her down, wearing her. Come on, come on, come on.
Which is what they do. Mm-hmm. He sees that she's in distress and use that to play to her vulnerabilities and emotions. Like, I'll be doing you a favor. Like, clearly you don't have this under control. So then you feel as a mom like, oh, you're right. I am kind of failing right now. I guess I should accept some help. No. You don't got to accept shit you don't want to.
Yeah, not from that guy. And I'm sure grocery stores have. If you were like, pardon me, I need assistance to get to my car. Could you have an employee help me take my groceries to the car while I carry the kid? Not to mention her husband worked there. But like if she did need help, mm-hmm. she could just ask a person in a name tag who at least, at the very least, you assume probably wouldn't snatch your kid because they work at the grocery store. Not some random guy.
Yeah.
This is the mall kiosk guy grown up. This is his whole life.
Oh, yep. We've seen him. He's evolved.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Well, this final one, we got a little local flavor for you, Melissa. And the subject line is Dallas Alien Encounter. And I just want to say thank you for writing this in because you made me feel less alone because I feel like I saw a UFO in Dallas.
I ended with this one and I gave it to you is because hard relate from Heather coming your way.
Also, when we were on your stoop, we were always just like, is that a UFO? We're in the flight path to Love Field. It's not. We're like, there's two UFOs together. They're going two different ways. Well, Melissa saw it for real. And this is her Dallas Alien Encounter. Hello, gal pals. Love the show, and I love that local ladies have made good. Y'all are amazing storytellers and comedy queens. Now, on to the story. I live on the east side of Dallas Love Field, university and lovers for the locals. So next to the airplanes, but not under the flight paths. And the airport is closed between 1 and 5 a.m. These encounters happened in 2014, but have not repeated since. I need complete darkness when sleeping, and any light, even in the deepest of sleep, when a light is turned on, it will wake me up. One middle of the night, I was dead asleep, but was suddenly awoken from a blazing orange light filtering through my blackout curtains that lit up my room like the midday sun. I have terrible vision and can't see much without my glasses, but half awake, I got up and went to the window thinking something happened to the curtain and was going to just move it back. The room was completely lit with the light when I got out of bed, but the 2 seconds it took for me to get to the window, the light was gone, and my room was pitch black again. I then picked up my glasses and looked out the window, but nothing was out of the ordinary. I turned to go back to bed, and then it dawned on me, wait, where did that light come from, and where did it go? The light vanished and didn't leave any afterimage in my eyes. I figured it was a waking dream and went back to bed. However, it happened 2 more times that week. Same blazing orange light and same disappearing with no afterimage or light sensitivity to the returned darkness. I was prepared the next 2 times and had my glasses on the ready for when I knew the light would wake me up. But every time, by the time I raced to the window, the light was gone and all seemed normal. There was never any sound associated with the light. It was quiet because it was winter and no AC units were running. And you would think if a light were that bright, there had to be some kind of sound associated with it. After that week, the light never came back, and I still live in this apartment. I never found a report about the lights over Love Field. So, what do you think? Alien or something else? I'm convinced it was an alien snooping around the airport. P.S. One night, driving down East Grand Street, heading in the direction of Fair Park, I saw a lit-up oval vessel floating in the sky, and I knew it was finally my time to see an alien. I wanted to get a better view and drove closer to Fair Park, and as the excitement rose, it was soon deflated, as it turned out to be the Goodyear blimp hanging out for Friday Night Football. I've never been more devastated. All the best for continued success, Melissa.
Do you feel seen, Heather?
I do feel seen, especially the Goodyear blimp. That's highly relatable.
What was it that, well, when you were in Paris for driving, you were convinced you'd seen a UFO, and then you had to say a few days later, it wasn't.
That was a plane. Later on, I was light outside, and then I saw the same thing, and it was very clearly an airplane. And I had my glasses on the second time, which makes a huge difference.
There you go. Well, or it doesn't, because by the time you get there, it's gone.
It's too late. Well, the light in the window is bizarre, because normally you'd say, oh, it's probably construction. Well, you would just still see the construction apparatus, whatever, shine.
Or hear it.
Yeah, you'd hear it, especially a generator at night, something that bright. Something that's, the description was that it was completely lit. The room is completely lit. So something that bright, that had to have been an alien poking around. You know what else is by Love Field is our... I say our, like we, you know what? I take ownership of this town. You and I and Leanne went to the Frontiers of Flight.
Frontiers of Flight.
Mm-hmm. We went to that. There's a lot of cool planes and stuff parked over there. So it does track, in my opinion, as an amateur ufologist, that if you were an extraterrestrial and you were trying to get a handle on what kind of space equipment we had, you say, oh, well, I see these commercial airplanes, you know, whether or not you can call it that. You see this regularity. Go to the Frontiers of Flight. There's all kinds of shit there.
Oh, yeah. There's like replicas of the Wright brother planes. There's war planes. There's all sorts of stuff.
Which I asked that tour guide if that was the actual Wright brother plane, and he laughed right in my face. And then
I've been to that museum multiple times. There's a little girl in Ella's class that's had her birthday 2 years in a row there.
Fuck yeah.
Because they have a whole children's section. It's very cool.
It's amazing.
And all the people that work there are like retired vets, and they just love talking about planes.
Oh, yeah.
So much. And I love talking to people that are passionate about what they're doing.
Oh yeah, just stoked on, because it's like the Flying Flapjack or whatever's there is that big ass round
thing. It looks like a UFO. Maybe
they own it. It's theirs.
Or they were like, it's one of us, we need to bring him back,
take him home. Oh my gosh, that's it. They were on the hunt for that. Don't quote me on that. It's called a Flying Flapjack. I think it is, though.
I think it is called the Flying Pancake.
The Flying Pancake, something like that. But it's a prototype aircraft that was developed in maybe the 60s or 70s.
It's wild looking.
It is. It looks like a flying pancake.
It 100% looks like an alien spacecraft.
Now that
also, I don't get how planes don't just fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
I'm not an engineer. This thing, though, looks more metally than a normal aircraft. Like, it shouldn't be able to go up and not just fall straight down.
It's thick. It's like a toad, but a plane. It's or it looks like a Roomba, possibly, that little wings.
But made out of, like, solid steel.
And yellow.
It's wild. If you're in the area, check it out. It's a great museum.
Check out the Frontiers of Flight Museum, where the docents are so nice. When you asked them, as I did, the Wright brothers plane, I go, it has an engine in it? And he goes, yeah. And I said, I thought they just pedaled it with a bicycle. And he laughed really hard. And then he went, oh, no, did you think that? And I said, no. And then I walked off, because I did. And then I realized later there's a Mr. Show sketch where that's a bicycle whirly gig kind of situation with Bob Odenkirk. Or no, it's not Mr. Show. It's Bob Odenkirk in a, it might be the Whitest Kids You Know, or Birthday Boys. It's a Birthday Boys sketch. Anyhow, a weird reference, and I wasn't going to go back and explain it to him because I already sounded like an idiot. So
I don't think he would have got it.
No, not at all.
But if he had, what if he'd been like, oh, do you mean like in the Birthday Boys sketch? God damn, docent is on point.
That's what they have to know, everything. That's also
a mixed bag. He's got knowledge about everything.
The museum where the three of us stood under the planes that are hoisted in the sky, and we're like, all right, fuck, marry, kill, Blue Angel, this jet, or whatever. And then very loudly, Leanne goes, I would fuck. And I was like, well, it's echoing because it's an airplane hangar. And now everybody knows what we're doing. We're standing under, first of all, we all agreed.
I forgot about that.
Fuck the Blue Angel, obviously.
I think, yeah, we all chose that one.
And then one of them was like a little biplane Or like
one
a
of
little,
them had a monster face painted on the front.
Yeah, it was like a World
or
War II.
A snake or something.
Kind of tough looking, blue and yellow, yeah. Bright. Yeah, and then the other one was a private jet, like a smaller private jet. But yeah, we were like, fuck, Mary, kill the place. Stupid, so dumb.
I'm glad you remembered that, man. I don't remember shit. I'm glad I have you around to remind me of funny things that we've done.
That was a really good time. Yeah, anyway, Frontiers of Flight. This episode is brought to you by Frontiers of Flight. I'm just kidding. But I would go there. It was fun. Go see the Flying Flapjack and check out, see if that guy knows the birthday boy sketch. I will say, though, I do think that back to Melissa's UFO, or not UFO, but extraterrestrial contact, either they're on the ground trying to get their flapjack back, or it's late at night. Extraterrestrial is just seeing who's home. Maybe it's like a Goldilocks situation, trying to find a place to crash, realize that you're in there, and is like, oh, turn the lights off, polite.
It's their version of you up. Like, just trying to get that booty call.
What are you doing? Hey.
Hey, you up?
You want to see my flying flapjack? Oh, well, Melissa, thank you. And man, I'd like to see the Goodyear blimp. Do they still have that? It's around. It'll probably be at Super Bowl this weekend.
I think so. I don't know that I've ever seen it either. If that in the Wienermobile, the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile, you hear about them, but you never see them.
We got to go. We got to track them down. Again, if you're in Tacoma, Portland, if you're any of these places and you have odd-shaped things, we'll go see that too. We'll go see it.
Well, to a degree. We'll go see some odd-shaped things that are legal for us to see. Please don't send us things.
Like Area 51?
No, like dick pics.
Oh, no, no, no. God, I'm not calling for that. Hell no. Hell no. What did that kid say? No, I said no.
No,
thank you.
Yeah.
Which is a great way to say go fuck yourself without saying it. So
in five-year-old language.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you, Melissa, and everybody for sending these in.
Absolutely.
Sinister Hood will be right back.
All right. Our final email is from Charlotte. Charlotte said, question about a mob hit. I lived in Ireland for several years as part of a special visa program. During the time that I was there, a small war had broken out between two rival Irish mafia families in Dublin. I had loosely followed the story since I was living in the city, but didn't know how easy it was to get caught up in it. One night in the spring of 2016, I was getting ready to leave work. I was jazzed about getting to leave at 7:30 p.m. since normally I had to stay until about 9 or so. The only problem was I could not find my keys. Unable to lock up my office building and being the only one there, I tore my purse and desk apart looking for my keys. I finally found them upstairs where I had left them while getting something from the storage room. Looking for them had taken a whole half hour, and I remember looking at the clock in the main office area and thinking, well, at least I get to leave at 8 instead of 9. I locked up and left. I walked the 10 minutes to my house and took a shower. As I was scrolling on my phone, I saw a Facebook post pop up from a local Irish news organization saying there had been a shooting about a mile or so from where I worked, and the victim was a member of the mob family. The post stated that the hit had happened about 7:45. Not thinking any more of it, I went to work the next morning. Mid-morning, a man stops by the office dressed in a trench coat. He flashes a badge for a split second and tells us he's a detective with the Garda, the Irish police. He asks if anyone had been in the office the night before. My boss, always looking to get out of any trouble, points to me. The detective turns to me and asks me when I left the office last night. Oh, I left at 8 o'clock, I said. You sure? He asked. Yes. He looked at me again. Was it raining when you left? In my head, I replied, it's Ireland, probably, but simply replied, I don't think so. I didn't need my umbrella. What time did you leave? He asked again. 8 o'clock. I looked right at the clock. I gestured to the clock in the office, and it was exactly 8 o'clock. And you didn't see anything unusual? He asked. No, I said, shaking my head. Are you sure? He asked again, pressing. No, I saw nothing, I said. He left it at that, and I put it out of my head. How weird to be questioned about a mob hit. But that wasn't where it ended. A day or so later, two more detectives with the Garda showed up. They clearly showed their badges to all of us and were friendly and talkative. They asked if anyone had been at the office the night of the shooting. I said yes, but that I had already spoken to the other detective that was here a few days ago. The detectives exchanged concerned glances. We haven't sent anyone here, they said. They asked for a description of the first man and said they didn't have anyone like that on the force. After the detectives left, I asked my friend and coworker, who was Irish and ran with a tougher crowd than I did, what was going on. I was thoroughly confused. That was when he told me that the official report was that the hitman had parked about a mile away from the victim's home in front of an office building to wait for the go-ahead and carry out the hit. It was my office building. They had been parked there from 7:15 to 7:40. If I had left when I was going to that night, I would have seen them, as the parking spot is directly in front of the front door. Not only that, but my coworker said, more than likely, the first detective wasn't a detective at all. He was a mob employee sent over to make sure no one saw anything that can incriminate them. So not only was I questioned about a mob hit, I was questioned by the mob itself.
That's wild.
Whew.
It's also smart of the mob.
Oh, yeah. Get the trench coat on. Don't show them the badge clearly. Just give them a little flash.
Yeah.
Flash
it. Nobody's going to question it, really. You go in there confident. And then if they had said, no, I did see something, that's your last day at that job, probably.
Yeah, I mean, go into your car or something. You never know if they feel like they have to take out witnesses or something like that. But we talk about that all the time, about the eerie nature of just, if only I had been out 5 minutes sooner or left 5 minutes later. And all due to lost keys.
Well,
you happen to avoid it.
I wonder how many times that has saved my life, because I'm constantly searching for them. That, chapstick, phone, everything. But yeah, you wonder, was the universe helping her out? And, you know, why did you need to go to the storage? Why are you up there? You know what I mean? It's a very sliding doors moment. Also, ballsy of the mob to just say, fuck it, we're parking in front of I guess the mob didn't care.
No,
we're
and I mean,
park in front of wherever.
If it looks like it's an office building, you probably think, oh, it's like a 9-to-5 office. So they probably close at 5. You know, it's just normal business hours. But who knew that Charlotte would be there and almost be there out at the same time, at the same time that the mob had been parked out there. But I think, yeah, I wonder if there's, you know, whatever you want to call it, the universe, a guardian angel of spirit, something that just going to put your keys in another room or just going to
You sounded like she knew she'd left him up there, but maybe there was a reason she needed to go up there to get something that day, or, you know, I don't know. It's a good thing that that it happened, though. I think about those things all the time. If I see an accident and I'm like, man, if I had left 5 minutes earlier, I could have been in that accident. But then I also wonder, a lot of times, if I left 5 minutes later, would I have also, like, avoided an accident that maybe I got in, you know? So it goes both ways.
That's true, yeah. We just can't live your life by what could have, would have, should have.
Nope.
It all, you know, something like this where you can't plan that the mafia is going to be, you know, out from your office.
That is a very, a true definition of a brush with crime.
Oh,
so
for sure.
Very good. All of these were very, very good ones to start off our Freaky Fridays. All interesting, compelling, and we have more to get through, but we're looking for more. Keep on sending them, because we'll make our way through them.
Yeah, this pretty much was, we read them in the order we got them. So it's just, we were like, do we do this? We're like, let's just, you send it in, we'll do it. We'll put it on the air.
We'll do them in the order that we received them.
Thank you, everybody, for sending in your Freaky Friday stories. If you have an odd but true tale, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. And speaking of freaky, if you've got something creepy caught on camera, if you found a weird or unexplainable clip online, maybe you just have a funny video you need us to see, send it our way and we would live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. It is a totally free stream to join. You just enter your email address and you can interact with us in the chat, watch us watch videos with you live that you sent in. So make sure you send the videos in at sinisterhood.com/scaries and join us over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central, totally free. If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie. I've got a lineup for y'all coming up that it's going to be again, pretty jaw on the floor kind of Judge Christie. Some strange petty grievances that I think truly might divide, if not the podcast, at least the audience. We also have true crime headlines. We have one of those coming up as well, with a ton of cold cases that have been getting solved that we are very excited to tell you all about. We also have Heather Saves on Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and all other subreddits that we feel require our input. We have a free trial where you join for a week at any of the tiers, check out all the perks, and cancel anytime before the trial is over without getting charged. When you do sign up for Patreon, make sure you do an annual membership. You get 1 month free as part of your annual plan. And all year long, you're going to get ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content, weekly audio bonuses, monthly minisodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet. Head over to sinister.com, click on shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos. And while you're on our website, you can review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. You can submit topics for cases you'd like us to cover, and you'll find fun things like topic-based playlists where we list all of our episodes of a certain type, like cryptids or true crime, in a single playlist on Spotify so you can share with a friend. We also have tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2027, the ultimate true crime cruise at sea. It's almost sold out, so make sure you get over to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister or use code sinister if you're checking out what cabins remain, because there's only a handful of them left. So we hope to see you on board February 8th through 12th, 2027. Go to crimewaveatsea.com. Use code sinister. Follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. You can like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you're looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now, from happy birthday to birth announcements to congratulations on whatever it is you've accomplished. We would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent to celebrate with you. It is a very thoughtful gift, but it's also one that you don't have to leave your house to buy, because it's hot as hell up here in Texas. So wherever you're at, if you're burning up, you don't have to go out in the heat. Just order it from the website, cameo.com/sinisterhood. You can find Christy online at Christy and Wallace, or Christy or GTFO. You can find me everywhere at Heather versus the World. As always, the devil rules the airways. Keep it creepy.
Sinister.